Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. What makes a city or a state business-friendly? Maybe it's property tax breaks or relaxed regulations to incentivize investment or attract large employers. The same policies that make a community business-friendly can be detrimental to communities of color. Donancin Carmona, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, has written about how federal policies like tariffs and immigration enforcement in particular cause harm to Latino-owned firms. Carmona says she sees this happening in Texas.
So I study what's going on all across the country, but I zeroed in on Texas because, A, it's considered by many to be business friendly, but they also sit at the intersection of rapid growth, demographic dependence, and policy volatility. And so growth in states like Texas is very much dependent on Latino and immigrant communities as workers, consumers, and importantly, business owners. So what I was studying was first and foremost Latino businesses, but over a course of a few months, as I was doing just regular interviews with local leaders, Latino business owners, and chambers, I started to note a pattern in our discussions. And that's what kind of prompted a deep dive into the series that I've been working on. And we were finding it's the combination of a few policy changes that are taking place across the country. First, it's immigration enforcement, tariff policy, and the changes around tariff policy, and then changes to federal programs. Now, you zoom in to then places like Texas, and you would think, oh, well, this is a business-friendly state. Presumably, businesses would be doing fine there. But we're also starting to see very, very similar patterns in places like Texas. And if anything, there might be even more exposure in a state like Texas because of the fact that Latinos are central to the Texas economy, immigrants are central to the economy, and Texas alone is home to roughly 12.1 million Latino residents, nearly 40% of the population. So you take that background, that foundation, and couple that with a series of changes that are impacting these populations, then you start to kind of know, oh, we might be having a problem here. These pressures might be stacking.
What was really interesting in a recent article that you wrote, you not just point out Texas, but Florida and North Carolina as examples. And I thought it was really interesting the contrast between Texas and North Carolina that you drew. North Carolina has seen an incredible boom in its Latino population, whereas Texas has always had a very strong Latino population. Can you maybe talk a little bit about those factors between those two states and why you sort of wanted to draw that comparison between the two? Because they are both still being impacted by these policy-driven economic changes.
Absolutely. So I looked at traditionally Latino hubs, so places like Texas and Florida first. But then it was actually news articles that alerted me to the fact that North Carolina was also being impacted by aggressive immigration enforcement, and specifically places like Charlotte. So while North Carolina is not typically viewed as a historic Latino hub, it has in recent years experienced one of the fastest rates of Latino population growth in the country. And not only do you see growth in the population, but also in the growth in Latino businesses. And so then you like zero in on a place like Charlotte. While it's still small in numbers of Latino employers in comparison to places like Texas, I mean, the rate of growth is significant. So Charlotte has like over 2,700 Latino employers as of 2022. And by employers, I mean, you know, these are Latino-owned businesses that have at least more than one employee. And they grew by 65%. So that's just the businesses. And the fact that they were being targeted was really interesting because it wasn't just, oh, this random immigration enforcement in a state. They kind of zeroed in on a specific place where you're starting to see a lot of growth. And specifically, they looked at Latino business corridors, and local media there was documenting what was happening. What was different, though, from, say, like a place like Texas, is you actually had local leaders that were responding to what was happening by trying to support the businesses, by government, like rapid response grants to support what was happening, versus a place like Texas. While you do have that historic Latino and immigrant population there, it wasn't necessarily clear that the civic community was coming together in the same way to support the business owners or the business corridors or specific work sites that were being impacted. And then you kind of zoom out and you actually see that actually state lawmakers there are collaborating in many ways with immigration enforcement, even though this could be detrimental to the state's economy.
Do you think that perhaps these state lawmakers and state officials have not really put the pieces of the puzzle together to realize that these enforcement practices and even something like tariffs is actually going to be impacting business, which Texas is so reliant on?
Absolutely. So it does seem that it's almost like these policies, as they come at the federal level or even the state and local levels, are seen as one-offs. But when you combine them, they actually create a ton of instability. I talk about it in terms of policy volatility for small business owners, for workers, for the local economies, because Texas is the nation's leading trading state, accounting for roughly 16% of total U.S. trade. And so that makes Texas highly sensitive to tariffs and tariff swings in particular. And tariffs are really hard on small businesses because it's not just the cost itself that might increase of their goods and services, but it's the fact that they can't plan for the future because, in this case, the tariffs keep changing, the policy keeps changing. People don't know whether they can hire or expand, if they should be buying certain products now or later. And that really impacts their bottom line. Now, you couple that with then changes to immigration enforcement, and that is creating a chilling effect in certain economies. So you take, for example, construction. That is a site where Latino business owners and workers tend to dominate, and they're concentrated there. And when you have people afraid to show up to work, that impacts the construction firm. And you see that across a bunch of different industries. And so right now, people are having a hard time planning, considering whether to expand. Customers are afraid to show up to certain sites. And so you see more empty corridors, you see a chilling effect. And so it becomes this combo of policies that can actually, in many ways, be visual too, to people who have noted the loss of foot traffic in many corridors.
Donancine Carmona is a fellow at the Brookings Institution. She's written about the economic fallout of federal policies on Latino-owned businesses. When we come back, Carmona argues that states like Texas must find ways to balance federal policy with economic stability.
This status quo is clearly not functioning and might do tremendous harm to the economy and to their state economy.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Do you own real estate that you're no longer using? A second home, rental property, commercial space, or land, you can turn it into meaningful support for Texas Public Radio. By donating your property, you help keep the programs you love on the air. It's easy, free, and may offer you a significant tax benefit. Learn more at tpr.careasy.org/real estate donation or call 844-277-HOME.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Federal immigration policies are having a devastating effect on the South Texas construction industry. Workers are being rounded up at ICE raids on construction sites in South Texas and the Rio Grande Valley. And uncertainty over White House tariffs have caused prices on building materials to skyrocket. Here's South Texas Democratic Congressman Vicente Gonzalez speaking last month at a House Committee on Financial Services hearing.
Just recently, I met with the South Texas Builders Association and had a very candid conversation about the labor shortage that we're suffering in Texas and across the country. Just last year, it was shown that we would have had 400,000 homes less built in this country if it had not been for immigrant labor. Right now, I have builders, I have realtors, I have lenders, I have title companies coming to me. These are folks who supported President Trump in his last election, who came to me and said what nobody else would say out loud, we need immigrants to build America.
Brookings Institution fellow Donancin Carmona says that uncertainty in the labor industry is disproportionately impacting Latino entrepreneurs and Latino-owned businesses in labor-intensive sectors in states like Texas, Florida, and North Carolina that are riding a delicate balance between rapid growth and policy volatility.
So I will just give a shout out to the Dallas Fed. As I've been doing a lot of this work nationally, the Dallas Fed has been doing a great job over the past few months documenting, either via surveys or through their own data analysis and research, what is happening to the regional and local economies throughout the state. You know, the Rio Grande Valley, for example, they were able to look at the specific indicators there to see what was happening, whether people were experiencing these economic shocks now or they were anticipating them. And construction leaders, you know, as you noted, were describing a chilling effect. And the Dallas Fed data reflected that as, you know, construction employment in the region fell by approximately 5%. That was a pretty steep drop during that quarterly data. It was the third quarter of 2025 that they noted this. You zoom out then, and the Dallas Fed has also been tracking over the last few months, you know, business owner sentiment overall, whether it be related to tariffs, immigration policy, or other things. And at least 20% or one in five business owners in Texas reported that immigration policy changes are hampering their ability to hire and retain workers. And roughly 40% of affected firms report that workers are missing work due to fear of immigration enforcement. And so it'll be interesting to see what is going to happen over the next years, just given that significant funding has been added to the immigration enforcement budgets overall.
And it seems like these policies have this cascading snowball effect because, again, talking about construction, which is, I think is probably the area which is probably the most visible when it comes to sort of this policy volatility. I mean, you have the supplies and then you have the workers. This is all going to lead to perhaps a housing shortage, an increase in housing prices. And this is just looking at the construction area. I'm assuming that when you look at sort of the broader economy, you might still see some of that cascading effect.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, Latino-owned businesses and workers are disproportionately concentrated in labor-intensive and place-based sectors. And these are sectors that have high exposure to policy shifts. So when you look at where they're clustered, you know, we've already talked about construction, but there's also accommodation and food services. There's retail. These are, of course, the spaces where you need almost the physical presence of workers. It's probably going to be the most visible for people. And for the most part, what's interesting is that when it comes to economic policy and data, a lot of it does get captured in terms of labor. What my research was starting to show is, like, actually, it's not just labor. You're going to see it in businesses. And to your point, it's going to ripple elsewhere because these aren't just specific sectors we're looking at now, but that's not to say that they are the only ones. And so for many reasons, as I've been doing this work, I've started to see Latino-owned businesses as almost the economic bellwethers, because they are clustered in the types of sectors that are getting exposed to this policy volatility, and because they are in places that, of course, require physical presence of workers, it's visible, right? That's not to say that this is the only place. And so it's kind of one of those, like, canary in the coal mine type situations.
And, you know, as you're speaking, and also when I was reading your most recent article, it really sort of brings to me memories of COVID. When the economy shut down, it was minority businesses, Latino, Black-owned businesses that were struggling the most. They felt it the most. And like you said, they were the ones who needed the workers there. So I think it's really interesting to see sort of that parallel in circumstances.
That's actually the parallel, the comparison that kept coming up the most when I was talking to either local chambers or business owners, that parallel to the pandemic. And these businesses very much, the data reflects this, experienced sharper early revenue declines and higher closure rates than white-owned firms. And that really did reflect their concentration in that high contact, labor-dependent sectors that we're seeing right now.
Well, the states you were talking about, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina, they're pretty much red states. They're not going to be inclined likely to tamp down on their immigration enforcement, for example. They're going to toe the line with what is happening in Washington. So how would you recommend that these states, I guess, stick to their guns, so to speak, and still try to accommodate for Latino-owned businesses that are so vital to the economy that are really feeling these pressures?
Yeah, well, I think the goal should always be stability in communities and the economy. And so if the issue of morality doesn't influence lawmakers, then perhaps the economic case can, in that the way that things are operating now, this status quo is clearly not functioning and might do tremendous harm to the economy and to their state economy. And then there's already harm happening now, but it's possible, very possible, that it can amplify. And so I would just, aim for the goal of how do we create stability? Does that mean making sure we're doing what we can to do immigration enforcement in a way that doesn't destabilize communities, for example? Or when it comes to tariffs, is there a way to create some stability there where, finally, first and foremost, we set what the tariff rate is versus changing it from month to month? But then, if the lawmakers aren't willing to listen to reason, then it really does fall on the rest of society. So private sector, philanthropy, civic leaders coming together to do what they can to stabilize their local economies. I've seen examples of other parts to the country, like Los Angeles, I mean, even Charlotte, they created those rapid response funds to support their local business owners just to keep their doors open, just to get foot traffic. You've seen regular people just, decide that they're going to shop in certain places because they want to support those businesses. I've seen other local leaders, nonprofit leaders, work to either create corridor stabilization funds together with philanthropy to support specific corridors that might be hard hit. Because at the end of the day, when those corridors are hit, that does impact state and local tax revenue too. And so that can ripple outward. And then finally, I've seen just these campaigns, even by content creators that are organizing people to shop in businesses that like really need our support. And so there's really something there to do, no matter who you are, whether you're a nonprofit, a regular person, a person in philanthropy, but it really does take policy change. And so my hope is that lawmakers really focus on doing the things that need to be done to create stability in their local economies.
Well, just going back to establishing some of those emergency funds, again, going back to the COVID pandemic, a lot of cities and counties and federal government, they had these emergency funds stashed away. So perhaps that might be something that cities and counties might think of for future budgets, because that always has to, I guess, to factor in into their fiscal year.
Absolutely. No, and some cities have started to make those plans because the thing is like this has only been what a year and a month into the current federal administration, and so it doesn't seem likely that things will change. And so that means that lawmakers at state and local levels need to start creating infrastructure and forms of resilience for their local economies to take on the policy volatility, whatever that policy is. You know, it seems to me that the fact that these changes are happening is part of the problem. So, you know, you take something like tariffs. Is it just the tariffs or the fact that the tariffs keep changing? If it's immigration, is it immigration or is it the fact that it's changing and creating instability? And so you kind of take that with whatever the policy is. If things are going to constantly change from day to day, week to week, then there needs to be some type of infrastructure locally such that you can get these rapid response funds quickly for whatever reason, that you can get civic leaders to organize and galvanize quickly for whatever it ends up being.
Here in Texas, and I think in other red states, you are seeing a pullback in providing assistance through minority grants, that kind of specific help for Latino or Black-owned or women-owned businesses for the sake of DEI. So what advice would you have for Latino business owners who are feeling this pressure as to you maybe where is the first place that you might want to look for help if these kinds of other programs have been pulled out from under your feet?
That's a hard question to answer for those in red states. I'm not going to lie on this because when I look to other states that are at least a little bit willing to not change federal programs, state programs, local programs that have supported business owners in the past, I mean, they at least have that form of support that serves as a stabilizing function in many ways. So, you know, you take Texas, and it's that historically underutilized business program, which is supposed to support women and minority-owned businesses to access contracting opportunities. When those types of programs get taken away, then what is the remaining stabilizing function? What is the thing that you can turn to that was supposed to be somewhat of a way to level the playing field? And now you don't have that. Other places are either increasing or supporting their existing programs or creating new ones through the work of nonprofits or philanthropy. And so if places like Texas are starting to target those programs, then I would say probably the last line of defense is going to come from local nonprofits and philanthropy. But I don't know if that's going to be sufficient. And so I would say that right now they should be planning for just more volatility in the years to come and seeing what they can do to keep their doors open, given that things are unlikely to change.
Well, before we wrap things up, I'm curious how you got into this field of work. Did you come from a family of Latino entrepreneurs?
So yes, I actually do. My father and my sister are both entrepreneurs. I came to this world through policy. So I was more of a, you know, researcher and in policy. And I started to look at topics like Latino wealth overall. And one of the avenues that I noted that Latinos build wealth is through entrepreneurship. So that was actually through conversations with my father and my sister that I started to delve deeper into this topic. And then my dad is actually from Texas. I have a lot of family in Texas. And that's what really motivated me to really look at what's happening in the state, in addition to the other places that I study.
Anything that you'd like to add that I didn't get a chance to ask you about that you'd like to mention before we wrap things up?
Sure. So when I talk about this topic, or I talk about Latino business owners in general, I really want to emphasize that they are foundational to the nation's economy. You know, in 2022, more than 465,000 Latino-owned employer firms employed over 3.5 million people and generated over $653 billion in total revenue. And between 2017 and 2022, Latino-owned businesses grew in nearly 90% of U.S. metros. That's why this topic is so important to study, because it's not niche. It is central to the nation's economy, and we should be paying attention to how these business owners are impacted, because it does ripple elsewhere.
Well, Tonantzin Carmona with the Brookings Institute, thank you so much for joining us today on Fronteras.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Donancin Carmona is a fellow with the Brookings Institution. She's the author of the article, "Even in Business-Friendly States, Federal Policy Shocks Are Hurting Latino-Owned Firms." Find a link to Carmona's reporting at tpr.org. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.